RNZ National. With me today, and Nadine Higgins, broadcaster and columnist, and Chris Wikard, a former journalist, now director at Busby, Graham Shaw Rice, communication specialist. And thanks, Chris Wikard. Many of us non-racist people from Ōtautahi are appalled at this, and the fact that we are all tarred with that person's behaviour, says Paddy. TV shows, police series, we talk about that today. Minder was good too. I recall The Professionals, The Sweeney, says Mark in the Bay of Islands. Loris says Starsky and Hutch. Gosh, that's going back a bit. Another one says, surely all I need to tweet is a deep doom, 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 followed by an electric piano riff, and everyone will know what I mean. And regarding the Deans, I've been thinking huge piles of whitebait cooked and dripping by my grandmother at Little Whanganui on the coast.
Oh, yes. Whitebait.
Whitebait with the fritters, made beautifully, eh? Now, by the way, if you want to hear the panel in your own time, or you want to catch up on a day that you have missed, I have it sent free to your phone. Just follow RNZ, the panel on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Now, last night, the government signalled a reset of New Zealand's immigration policies. Minister for Economic Development, Stuart Nash, standing in for Minister for Immigration, Chris Farfoy, said the government wanted to pivot immigration away from immigrants considered low-skilled. Defending this shift, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern rejected the suggestion Kiwis are work-shy and don't want to take up jobs in sectors that have heavily relied on immigrant labour. But is this true, and is our economy built to be reliant on low-wage labour? Dr. Eric Crampton is Chief Economist at the New Zealand Initiative. He's with us now in the Wellington studio and has written about this. Dr. Crampton, kia ora, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, thank you.
Well, what are the key changes the government is proposing?
Well, they didn't really announce much last night. They were more reiterating what they've said previously, that they want to see a lot less migration than New Zealand has had. There seems to be a continued focus on some of the short-term visas. Right now, there's been some problems where people who come in on short-term work visas do have an expectation that they can file for residence. Their application might be rejected at some point, but they would expect that it'd be processed. There's now backlogs in the tens of thousands or more of people who are just waiting in the queues. The government has worried that a lot of these short-time workers and potentially longer-term workers are depressing wages for locals, with increased competition among workers for jobs. But the empirics on it are a little dicey.
Well, Prime Minister Ardern said the use of migrant labour had been a type of exploitation by some employers, and it served to suppress wages in industry sectors, which was both unfair to migrants and unfair to New Zealand workers. And Dr. Cramp, we all know sectors that have employed a lot of people from overseas who might be called low-wage workers.
Sure. There are some very real problems in the immigration system. Whenever you get a situation where someone's continued ability to stay in the country depends on their employer being happy with them, then you've got situations that are ripe for exploitation. You give employers inordinate power over a worker in that kind of a setup where their visa depends on their employer being happy with them. Now, the problem with that isn't so much labor market exploitation. It's that we've set a system that makes it pretty hard for migrants in some cases to shift between employers. Normally, if you've got an employer who's a bit of a jerk, well, you've got potential redress through government channels or by finding another employer. If you're scared you're going to lose your visa, if you take up any of those options, you're in a terrible spot. That can and should be addressed. It's not a problem of numbers, though. It's the way the system's being run.
That's a policing and a support issue more than a policy issue, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of both. If you set a situation where you are really depending on the employer that way, even if you do have a lot of good policing, you could still wind up with someone who fears reporting in the first place, because they might wind up in a kind of a limbo, right? You've reported your employer who's doing something terrible, but your visa kind of depended on them, and you don't know what's going to then happen. Trying to set it so that employees have a bit more choice is a better way of approaching it, I think. But I'm not disagreeing with the need for enforcement.
So how might you do it differently?
providing a bit more opportunity for people to choose different employers would be a start in visas where that is a problem. But I worry more that the government's underlying presumption is a bit ill-founded. So during the prior rounds of sort of the Productivity Commission's discussions on this, there's been a lot of focus on the regional, the recognized seasonal employer scheme, for example, as potentially being a source of exploitation. And that's a weird one because the R in RSE stands for recognized. And the whole scheme was set up under Helen Clark's government to try and get rid of some of the problems that they'd seen in previous kind of undocumented seasonal work where people would come in from the islands and would do work sometimes under the table. There were some exploitative situations there. And they set the whole thing up so that the employers had to meet a pretty strict set of conditions to be able to be allowed to have these workers in the first place. It set the numbers, it set some of the pay conditions. And it's proven pretty successful. Now, the argument has been from some in government here that it's discouraging people from hiring locals, but productivity among those workers seems very high. And if we start, there's been good empirical work in the U.S. on sort of comparable regimes suggesting that they're not really holding wages down. And I'll just go through a little bit on that. In the early 1960s, the United States had a whole pile of migrant farm workers who would come in from Mexico for seasonal employment in on the farms. And a lot more of them would come in for seasonal employment in the states that were very close to the Mexican border. Very few would get much farther north. And when President Johnson ended the arrangement that allowed all of those workers to come in, that provided an opportunity for study because it'll have bigger effects on states that are really close to the border than states that are farther away. So you can use the differences over time to look at effects. Michael Clemens has done the work on this. It was published in about the best journal in economics that we have just a couple of years ago, and it showed that banning all of those seasonal migrant workers had no effect on the wages of local farm workers.
I'm just looking at, though, let's take one association. Let's wait, take one sector. Say you've got the Aged Care Association, which represents rest homes. About 55% of nurses in that sector are on some kind of visa. This is not really an enforcement issue, is it? This is a really systemic issue.
Yeah, we import a lot of nurses, often from the Philippines, to assist in the aged care facilities. That's true.
So why can't we have more New Zealand workers in those roles? Maybe lift the wages a little bit there, Eric.
Well, we'd have to train up a lot more. That'd put some pressure on the schools. Mm. The Nurses Council would have to authorize a lot more nurses to go through. But we'd also have sort of a tilting of the New Zealand domestic workforce towards providing more services into the aged care sector. So it's not like there's some lump of jobs in New Zealand that are available to be done. The number of jobs that could be done is near infinite. And despite all of these nurses coming in to help in the aged care sector, we're not seeing mass unemployment of the kinds of people we might expect would otherwise be employed in nursing. They're doing other really important things.
What do you think about this?
Well, you know, it's not so much the devil in the detail, but it all comes down to dollars. You know, and the amount of money which is required to run, if we use the aged care facilities, health. I mean, the health system is creaking. Health ministers are the bane of finance ministers' existences because they're always there. I'm saying, please, sir, can I have more? It's like the Oliver Twist portfolio of cabinet. Simply, and that may be oversimplifying it a little, but you know, where are the funding streams and what allows for greater wages in those sectors?
Dr. Crampton, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you for your time. Thanks for coming to the studio. It is 16 past four. The panel, RNZ National. And by the way, we are